a global outrage against this ongoing live-streamed genocide, and it is, of course, impossible for anyone around the world to ignore this genocide. I think it has shown political alliances, it has shown political and ideological and moral stance of governments, of movements, of organizations, of people. So Gaza has revealed a lot of what is wrong with the world currently. So it has, throughout history, but especially in the last 2 years, it has had a global dimension. However, I would argue very differently from what the Israeli regime argues, because if we look at the rhetoric used by the Israeli regime, it is, of course, trying to claim that protest against genocide around the world, including in Australia, were allegedly anti-Semitic, which is, of course, a very different question.
Okay, let's move on to Mr. Leon. Thank you so much for your patience. I think, you know, in your opinion, to what extent can the rising hatred and violence that we've seen worldwide be separated from Netanyahu's policies? Because as our previous guest just mentioned, the what we're seeing in Palestine has never been limited to it. There have always been international connotation to. So in your opinion, how you know, related is these policies of Netanyahu and the Israeli government and the Israeli regime policies related now to the, you know, the global scene?
I believe counter to what Netanyahu and other Zionists claim, this is not as much related to anti-Semitism as it is related to anti-Zionism. And it is a direct response to the settler colonial atrocities and apartheid that is being committed by the settler colonial government of Israel against the Palestinians. It's the same practice that we saw in the United States as the settler colonialists in the United States attacked the indigenous Native Americans. We saw it in the United States as they interned Japanese Americans during World War II. We can see that with the enslavement of Africans in the United States. We can see how it played itself out in South Africa, with the settlers in South Africa attacking black South Africans. This is just another chapter in the same book. And the Zionists in the settler colony state in Israel are intentionally misrepresenting the reality here. They are trying to connect the anti-Zionist response to the so-called anti-Semitic response. If they were to stop their atrocities today, if they were to stop the genocide today, you would see a immediate response in terms of a lack of attack on Jews around the world. That's not what this is about.
Right. Okay, so Mr. Daniel, I would like to build on what, you know, Mr. Leon has just mentioned, which is the fact that the Zionists themselves have created a situation where they deliberately, you know, align themselves with the Jewish faith. And we've seen that for many of the 2 years that the protests against the genocide have been taking place, we've had many Jewish voices speaking up. For average people who may not be able to differentiate between Zionism and Judaism, and they just see the, you know, the what's in front of them, how is the world now supposed to react to this? Because this is not the first time, right? Like you just mentioned, the fact that after the September 11 attack, Muslims generally were classified, you know, all as terrorists. How do we prevent this from happening? Or is it even possible to prevent this kind of hate towards Jews as the Israelis continue to murder and maim?
Exactly. So this confusion between Zionism, Judaism and Jewish people, and this entire idea of racializing Jewish people as an ethnicity has been by design part and parcel of Zionism. The early opposition, if we go back into history, the early Jewish opposition to Zionism from approximately more than 100 years ago. Many Jews have argued back then that Zionism was in fact an anti-Semitic movement because it was based on prominent European white supremacist racial theories and pseudoscience. And interestingly, Theodor Herzl, one of the so-called founding fathers of Zionism in the late 19th century, has in fact predicted that the anti-Semites would be the closest allies of the Zionists. So Zionism is a racist movement, and it has been using Judaism for its purpose by trying to hide behind the idea of dominant concepts of understandings of Judaism, Jewish culture, and so on, in order, of course, to conflate what Zionism, again, just to repeat for viewers, Zionism is a genocidal settler colonial movement that is a racist ideology, and it has emerged in the last 200 years or so. It is, however, culturally and politically a very dominant and powerful force in the Western world and in the settler colonies, including North America, Australia, and so on. And of course, this conflation has been by design for Zionists because Zionism requires a hatred towards Jews. It requires this idea that Jews would not, that Jews are different, that they wouldn't feel safe elsewhere. So there's a lot to unpack here, but basically we're talking about equating a genocidal movement with human beings.
Right. Mr. Leon, I want to come to you and I want to address this as an African-American yourself who have experienced the fact that generalization when it comes to population or race is very dangerous. Even though we understand why people are angry at the Zionist regime because of the brutality that they have unleashed on the world, how can we stop or react or perhaps address the fact that people now are generalizing and saying, yeah, well, they deserve it, they got it coming. And because we know the danger that that entails, because if we allow it for one group, then we're saying that it is okay for every other group.
What transpired in Australia was a hate crime and is unacceptable. Anyone with a moral compass should be disgusted at what transpired in Australia. That was a horrific act that cannot be defended in any way, shape, or form. But with that being said, it's important, I think, to differentiate between the heinous act that took place and the politics behind it. So when you, and this is one reason why I don't have a problem having this conversation, because Benjamin Netanyahu chose to politicize the atrocity. The Western media has chosen to politicize the atrocity. So I'm not, nor do I think anybody on this, in this discussion, Daniel or anybody else, is justifying or rationalizing what happened. It's an atrocity. But as soon as the interests in the Zionist colony decide that they, that this fits their political purpose, well, now then that to me opens up an entirely different conversation. When commentators in the West start discussing this in the context of anti-Semitism, they're wrong. And we need to, not all Jews are Zionists, and not all Zionists are Jews.
Okay, very important point there. I want to go back to Daniel, building up on what Mr. Leon has said about the fact that the Western media is playing on this because, and they're trying to use it to propel the narrative that has been prevalent for the past 7 decades when it comes to the issue of Palestine or when it comes to Muslims in the region. But I do want to point to the fact that one of the incidents that has sparked a lot of online reaction was the fact that a Muslim man, or someone who is seen as, you know, from West Asia, was one of the people who stopped this, and it's either being glazed over or it's been ignored. And if it'd been reversed, if he had been the one perpetrated that act, the Western media would be very fast to point to his faith. Can you speak on that, please?
Definitely. And there's, of course, again, here, a lot of different problems that play a role in the Western media's very racist framing when it comes to the representation of anything related to Palestine and to the Zionist entity in general, which of course has to do with the very well documented and academically documented in research bias of dominant Western media, and of course the political economy of major Western media outlets, where oftentimes crucial details are omitted, particular details are focused on in order to create certain frames and biases that would help perpetuate dominant narratives. One example that we've seen is that some Western mainstream media was very quick to try to ridiculously blame Iran even for the incident that has taken place in Australia. So Western dominant media is generally, I'm speaking about mainstream media such as the New York Times in the United States or the BBC and other state media in Europe, very much aligned with the Israeli regime. And so, of course, a story in which a Muslim individual helps save people's lives and prevent more atrocities is not as favorable as speculations or racialized depictions of or speculations about perpetrators. And this is something that we've seen again throughout the past decades, because one major component of Western media is, in particular in the last 2 years, to perpetuate this genocide, to normalize the genocide and to justify it without naming it. So even when it comes to any representation that has anything to do with, in this case, if we're referring to the statements by the Israeli regime, there is oftentimes the Israeli regime's line becomes part of a headline, and is the main source, and this is a structural problem in Western media. So what we've seen in the last 2 days is not surprising at all, unfortunately.
Right. I want to go back to Mr. Leon.
Can I add one more example?
Yes, go ahead.
When I think Daniel would agree with this. When you look at the gentleman, Rahmanullah Lakhanwal, the Afghani who shot the two National Guard people in the United States. The Trump administration immediately tried to spin this to be anti-immigrant. And they also spent a lot of time talking about how was this man radicalized and who radicalized him and we don't know who he is and all of this, only to find out that he was part of the Zero Unit in Afghanistan. He worked for the CIA. He was trained by the CIA, and the issue with him was not the fact that he had been radicalized. It was the fact that he had been ignored. Once he was brought to the United States failed to support him. And when he couldn't support his family, he then had a mental breakdown. So they didn't want to discuss that aspect of it because it didn't fit their anti-immigrant narrative. So again, they politicize the tragedy and try to spin it to their own advantage.
Right, and staying with you, because we know that you're trying to spin this as well. You're trying to make different aspects of it to fit into that narrative. And one of it is what Daniel mentioned with the fact that Iran is being named as one of the suspects. And I just want to point to perhaps how desperate now the Asbara and this, you know, propaganda narrative is getting to the point where countries like Iran, that itself has been repeatedly attacked and targets of terrorist attack, will now be named without any evidence, without any facts. And this is also being repeated in many Western media. Can you please speak on that?
Well, Iran is an easy target, no pun intended.
Right.
Iran is an easy target because Iran has been vilified to such a degree by the West that now all Netanyahu or all Donald Trump or any of the others have to do is mention the name. And mentioning the name, mentioning the word, the country Iran, creates this knee-jerk negative reaction, again, because of the vilification that they have been subjected to. And we find this, usually what the United States does is they attack an they vilify the individual. So whether it's President Putin is a madman or whether it's Maduro is a madman, they tend to personalize their vilification. But in this instance, as it relates to Iran, they have vilified the entire country.
Okay. Mr. Daniel, I want to look at the fact that, you know, terrorist organization or terrorist groups such as ISIS do not need justification. But going forward, they might be exploiting the images coming out of Gaza, just like we know that they exploited, you know, the images coming out of Iraq when the U.S., attacked that country to recruit and carry out more terrorist attacks. And we know that, some are saying that this attack in Australia is linked to the terrorist group. In your opinion, do you think we might be seeing a repetition of this where terrorist organization takes something out of context and use that to justify their own heinous attacks?
Well, this might be very possible, but I think the underlying problem at this point is really to identify who is or constitutes which so-called terrorist organization, given in particular what we've seen in the last 15 years or so in Western Asia, obviously given the a lot of the information that was made public or was leaked by official communication of the U.S. government. We know that there has been a collusion between terrorist groups in Syria and Iraq with the U.S. government and the CIA and the Israeli regime. We now have a situation in Syria where some of those terrorist groups are now the internationally recognized government of that sovereign country. I think the boundaries here have been blurred to some extent. You all mentioned Iran, how Iran has been and continues to be a target of terrorism of ISIS and the Israeli regime, but it is being presented itself as a terrorist organization in Western political discourse. So it very much comes down to the question who talks on behalf of whom, who actually has the power to write these narratives. But I definitely think that political, different forms of political violence, which are widespread, might be, of course, expanded. We need to keep in mind that there is, on the other hand, of course, globally, frustration in different regions for different reasons going on. So I think that obviously violence continues to take place, but it's always a matter of how it is being framed and presented.
Okay. And also I want to go to Mr. Leon, because we know that the United States and in extension the Western Hemisphere has continued to support the Israeli regime to carry out many of its crimes, not just in Palestine, but also in West Asia, attack across many countries. Do you think now that they also have a responsibility in the way that, the world is reacting to Israeli crimes? Because we have discussed how globalized the Israeli crimes are. It's not just limited to Gaza. Jews now across the world are paying the price for it. But do you think perhaps we may say that the United States, and in extent, Australia and many of the other Western countries that have continued to support the regime are also in fact responsible for the violence that we may be witnessing in the near future?
Oh, there's no question. If this were in American criminal law, they would be accessories before, during, and after the fact. Because the genocide that the Zionist colony is engaged in could not take place without support of and funding and armament from the United States. And when you look at the attacks on Israel, when you look at what's taking place in Lebanon, these things could not take what's going on in Syria, as the Zionist colony has played a role in undermining the stability in what was the stability in Syria. All of this cannot take place without the United States agreeing to allow it to happen. So yes, they are definitely complicit, and they are accessories before, during, and after the fact.
Okay, Mr. Janel, just before we let you go under a minute, if you can, we do know that before the genocide in Gaza began, Netanyahu himself was under a lot of public dissatisfaction. We saw thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of Israeli coming out against him and demanding for his arrest. We may argue on what basis they were coming out, but the very prevalent information is that he is not very welcomed in Israel, in Israeli politics. But we see that the media doesn't really, recognize this aspect of things. And even if it does, it is only to justify and say, oh, it's only a fringe part of the Israeli, society that wants the genocide in Gaza to continue. Look at all these people protesting. But it's something different. I do want to ask, though, that, why is voices that are against Netanyahu, even within the Israeli system itself, being ignored by the Western government? Why do they continue to fund and support this genocidal, war criminal, according to the International Criminal Court?
Because the Israeli regime serves as a military base and as an extension of Western white supremacy, racism, and colonialism in Western Asia. The Israeli regime is a tool for the West, for the United States. And so, of course, it is very important for Western media and political discourse to present these all Israelis as one collective unit that is defending itself allegedly and under threat. And of course, the other reason is that Zionism is a genocidal movement. Netanyahu is a symptom of the broader issue. If it weren't for Netanyahu, there would be someone else in power who would be administering this genocide. So these are only minor differences. In the end, the issue, the genocidal structure, lies in the movement itself.
Okay, well, we would have enjoyed to keep this conversation going, but we are out of time. So let me thank both of you for taking your time to join us, first in Barcelona, Daniel Yujik, author and researcher, and also from Washington, D.C., Wilmer Leon. Both of you, thank you so much for your time and your contribution. Thank you so much. Goodbye from me and the team.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Let's recite the Quran.
وَإِذَا قَرَأْتَ الْقُرْآنَ جَعَلْنَا بَيْنَكَ وَبَيْنَ الَّذِينَ لَا يُؤْمِنُونَ بِالْآخِرَةِ حِجَابًا مَسْتُورًا
القرآن نور وبيان القرآن هدي الإيمان القرآن مسك الختام
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Welcome to this episode of Let's Recite the Quran, dear listeners. My name is Muhammad, and with me today we only have two brothers in the studio, Brother Hassan and Brother Masoom. Assalamu alaikum, brothers.
Alaikum salam.
How are you doing today?
Alhamdulillah.
Energetic? A happy day for the Quran. Yeah?
Yes.
We have so far, alhamdulillah, recited verses 1 through 11 of Surah Al-Jinn, verse chapter number 72 of the Noble Quran. In this episode, inshallah, we will be reciting from verse number 12 of this chapter, of this very beautiful and sometimes scary chapter as well. All right, so I'll ask Brother Hassan to please take the honors of reciting verse number 12 of this chapter. Brother Hassan.
Yes. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وأنا ظننا أن
accent, very beautiful, and again, your confidence is improving, and I really appreciate that. Very beautiful. Keep in mind, there are certain places that you need to apply tarqiq and tafkhim, right? Wherever you apply tafkhim, you have to be careful about that. Elsewhere, you apply tarqiq. The default application is tarqiq. Tarqiq and tafkhim basically means, tarqiq means that when you're reciting, you recite with a flat mouth, a flat sound, and a smiling face, right? Tafkhim is basically when you round your mouth, mouthful, and a heavy voice, right? For example, at the beginning of the verse that you recited, the wa is tafkhim, right? Right, Brother Hassan? Can you repeat that?
Wa-nanna.
Look at me, look at my lips. Wa-nanna.
Wa-nanna.
Very good. So round your mouth and give it a heavy voice. Tafkhim again in this case. Why do we do tafkhim in this case, whereas lam is not necessarily a letter of tafkhim? By the way, can you tell me what are the letters of tafkhim? So we did, in I think a episode long back, we made a sentence out of the letters of tafkhim, and it is a difficult sentence, but if you memorize it, it makes it easy for you. Khussa Dhaghatin qid.
Khussa
Dhaghatin qid. Kha Sa. Kha Sad Bad Ghain Ta. Qaf Ba. Right? All of these letters are full mouth letters, we call them. Tafkhim letters. Right? So, lam is not one of them, but we do apply tafkhim in this case. Why? Because the lam of Allah, the middle lam, which is the mushadda lam of Allah, whenever we have fatha or dhamma before it, we apply tafkhim. In this case, nu'jizallaha. Or for example, if you want an example of dhamma, astaghfirullaha. Right? For example, when we have tarqiq now with kasra before the lam of Allah, lillahi. You see the difference? Astaghfirullaha lillahi. Correct? So the tafkhim and tarqiq is based on situation for the lam of Allah. And then we have fil ardi. The Ra and Ba, both of them, we apply tafkhim. However, as we mentioned, the letters of tafkhim are Khussa, Daghatin, Qiv. Kha, Sa, Dad, Ghain, Ta, Qaf, Va. Right? These are the letters of tafkhim. Ra is not one of them. Why do we apply tafkhim here? Again, Ra is just like the Lam of Allah. Situationally, we apply tafkhim for it. Whenever Ra has fatha or dhamma, we apply tafkhim. Whenever it has kasra, we apply tarqiq. In this case, it has neither, but we still apply tafkhim. Why? Because whenever ra comes with a sukun, we look at the letter before it. We look at the vowel before it. If it's fatha or dhamma, which in this case is fatha, al-ardi, we apply tafkhim for ra. It's not very clear in the recitation, but you will know it when you're reciting with tafkhim and without tafkhim, right? Al-awdi, correct? But if it has kasra before the ra sukun, which is ra, which is with sakin, right? If the ra with the sukun comes after kasra, then we do not apply tafkhim. We apply tarqiq, correct? Anna bananna allan نعجز الله في الأرض ولن نعجزه. Again, we have هارابا. هارابا. الراء over here is with فتحة, therefore تفخيم is applied. هارابا.
وأنا ظننا أن لن نعجز الله في الأرض ولن نعجزه هربا.
And we have become certain that we will never cause failure to Allah upon earth, nor can we escape him by flight.
So inshallah, the other points of tajweed we will emphasize in verse number 13 of this chapter, which will be recited by Brother Masoom. Brother Masoom, please take the honors.
Yes. وَأَنَّا لما
سمعنا الهدى آمنا به فمن يؤمن بربه فلا يخاف بخسا ولا رهقا.
أحسنتم. Very beautiful. وَأَنَّا لَمَّا Why did I apply غُنَّة? غُنَّة meaning nasal sound with a small stretch up to two counts, okay? Why did I apply in these two places? وَأَنَّا لَمَّا Can you tell me, Brother Basil?
It's because both of them are assigned with shadda.
Exactly. When we have noon or meem with shadda, we apply the ghunna. وَأَنَّا لَمَّا سَمِعْنَا الْهُدَى Remember in a few verses before this, we have لِسَّمَاءِ In verse number, let me tell you exactly. We had verse number 9. مَقَاعِدَ لِلسَّمْعِ مَقَاعِدَ لِلسَّمْعِ That was a Shamsi letter or a sun letter, and we did explain very much in detail in that episode about sun letters and moon letters. In this case, we have something opposite of that. We have the moon letter, right? That one was مَقَاعِدَ لِلسَّمْعِ Seen is one of the sun letters. What happens with the sun letter? Whenever we have a sun letter with an alif lam before it, the lam becomes completely silent in the recitation, and this first letter of the sun letter, the first letter of the word, which is the sun letter, becomes mushadda, becomes takes a shadda. لِسَّمْعِ السَّمَاءِ Right? These are all sun letters. In this case, we have سَمِعْنَا الْهُدَى Ha is one of the qamari letters, or the moon letters. The lam is as it is originally. Alif Lam, Al Huda is there. The only difference is that the Alif Al Wasl of the Al Huda becomes silent because it is recited without a waqf.
Mm-hmm.
Correct? It's connected to the haraka before it. Wa anna lamma sami'na al huda. This med of the Huda at the end of Huda, what kind of a med is it, Brother Rasul?
It's Jaiz one.
Jaiz, meaning that you can go up to two counts, four counts, or six counts. It's up to you.
Mm-hmm.
But keep in mind that you should try your best to be consistent in your recitation. Amanna bih. Again, the nun al-mushadda, right?
Yeah.
Ghunna is applied here. Then we have the waqf at the end of bi. If we were to stop in this case, آمَنَّا بِهِ There is no haraka given to the ha. Ha becomes a sakin. However, if we were to continue, it becomes آمَنَّا بِهِ فَمَن يُؤْمِن Correct?
Mm-hmm.
Very good. So this waqf again is a waqf of salah, meaning that it's preferred that you continue, but you can stop. It's up to you. Brother Masoom, a final question from you. Why do we recite فَمَن يُؤْمِن بِرَبِّهِ and not فَمَن يُؤْمِن بِرَبِّهِ
At the first case, it's because of إدغام.
Exactly. So the first noon that we did a غُنَّة on, غُنَّة basically means nasal sound and a little bit of a stretch, we said فَمَن يُؤْمِن instead of فَمَن يُؤْمِن. This is because, as you said, because of idgham. Idgham
sure.
basically means whenever we have a nun sakin or tanween, which in reality is a nun sakin at the end. And followed by that, we have any of the yarmanun letters, ya, ra, mim, lam, waw, and nun. We apply the ruling of idgham. We merge those letters with the nun sakin. Nun sakin loses its sound. And we apply ghunna for all of these letters except for lam and ra. In this case, we have ya, so we apply ghunna. فَمَن يُؤْمِن بِرَبِّهِ Why didn't I say فَمَن يُؤْمِن بِرَبِّهِ Why do I have to say فَمَن يُؤْمِن بِرَبِّهِ
In this case, it's because of the application of إقلاب.
إقلاب, very good. Whenever we have a nun sakin or a tanween followed by a ba, right? We apply apply the ruling of Iqlab. Iqlab means changing of the noon into a meme, but not a complete meme, an incomplete meme. A complete meme means that we close our lips and apply the complete pronunciation of meme. But in this case, we are somewhere between noon and meme. We have the ghunna, the nasal sound, and a little bit of a stretch, but the meme is not complete. We kind of halfway close the lips. فَمَن يُؤْمِن بِرَبِّهِ. Though the listeners might not get it very clearly because they're not looking at my lips, but my brothers over here can testify in the studio that I am not closing my lips, right?
Yes.
فَمَن يُؤْمِن بِرَبِّهِ فَلَا يَخَافُ. Again, خَا is one of the تَفْخِيم letters. يَخَافُ بَخْسًا. Again, keep in mind, letter of تَفْخِيم. بَخْسًا وَلَا رَهَقًا. Again, we have إِدْغَام with a ghunna. بَخْسًا وَلَا رَهَقًا. Correct?
وَأَنَّا لَمَّا سَمِعْنَا الْهُدَىٰ آمَنَّا بِهِ فَمَنْ يُؤْمِنْ بِرَبِّهِ فَلَا يَخَافُ بَخْسًا وَلَا رَهَقًا.
And when we heard the guidance, we believed in it. And whoever believes in his Lord will not fear deprivation or burden.
Let's repeat these two verses together, inshallah. A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Wa anna dhananna an lan nu'jiza Allah fil ardi wa lan nu'jizahu haraba.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وأنا ظننا أن لن نعجز الله في الأرض ولن نعجزه هربا.
أحسنتم. Verse number 13 now. وَأَنَّا لَمَّا سَمِعْنَا الْهُدَىٰ آمَنَّا بِهِ فَمَنْ يُؤْمِنْ بِرَبِّهِ فَلَا يَخَافُ بَخْسًا وَلَا رَهَقًا.
وَأَنَّا لَمَّا سَمِعْنَا الْهُدَىٰ آمَنَّا بِهِ فَمَنْ يُؤْمِنْ بِرَبِّهِ فَلَا يَخَافُ بَخْسًا وَلَا رَهَقًا.
أحسنتم. For the stretching of سَمِعْنَا الْهُدَىٰ آمَنَّا بِهِ, I personally would prefer that we go for four counts, somewhere between the normal med and the connected med. The connected med is four to five counts, right?
Mm-hmm.
The separated met, which in this case is a separated met, is 2, 4, or 6. So we go in the middle, 4 counts, right? The necessary met, the wajib met, we'll go for the 6 counts, right? I think this is going to be a fair and a consistent recitation of the met. For this episode, inshallah, we will conclude. Thank you for listening to us, and we hope that you enjoyed our recitation of the Quran. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
Let's recite the Quran. A joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نرقى الجنان تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه انصتوا
to be with the bird crow. Preserve your mind and feed it. Nourish what it is you have inside. Use it in the right way.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, A Martyr's Courage. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to A to Z here on I'm Being Shreya with my sister Zainab. And look, a martyr's courage is obviously courage that I assume goes beyond the sort of courage that we might have just in our daily lives, because obviously martyrs often are in particular circumstances. Many of them, obviously, if we're referring, for example, to the Holy Defense, have been in, obviously, in life and death situations where they were fearless because they had to deal with an enemy. Obviously, these sorts of circumstances do arise from in other people's lives, so not just back then in the Holy Defense, but these things did arise more recently, for example, in what's now referred to as the 12-day war, and indeed in other sort of conflict situations. Now, they could also arise in our daily lives because maybe there's an accident, maybe there's a natural disaster, maybe people do, in some circumstances, go beyond, you know, just that normal courage we have and sort of rise beyond that. And I just thought, obviously, I'll talk about, let's say, the sort of courage of the martyrs, first of all. So just to name one person, so one of the martyrs from the Holy Defense, Ibrahim Hadi. So it's like all the martyrs, he feared only God. And just to give you an idea of what his behavior was, so in the conflicts that were leading up to, and the clashes and the sort of horrible sort of fights in the streets, the leading up to the Islamic Revolution, his friends witnessed some of his particular courage. So, for example, there were sort of armed guard forces that were sort of obviously trying to sort of fight the sort of revolutionary forces at that point. And Ibrahim Hadi was actually throwing pieces of bricks at these armed forces. Welcome back to A to Z here on I'm Being Shreya with my sister Zainab. And So as I'm talking about the courage that the martyrs display, I've just mentioned the example of Ibrahim Hadi, who's throwing bricks. So he had, basically, Ibrahim Hadi had no weapon, no arms other than bits of bricks, bits of stone, basically. And he was hurling these at armed forces. And obviously this... this is obviously a sort of situation that probably many of you will immediately think of, you know, images and clips you've seen, also from occupied Palestine, where the Palestinians at some points had nothing but sort of stones to sort of hurl at the occupying forces, basically. And this is something maybe we witness in also in other countries around the world, where people are being oppressed and they do not have arms, any weapons, so people will just take whatever it is they have. So obviously, so what we can draw from this is that, yeah, there might be times where we think that, you know, we're not like the martyrs. And you know, and obviously this is what Ibrahim Hadi's friends were observing. They would sort of look at him and sort of think, how can he be like that? How can he be this courageous? But obviously what's the root of this is being fearless. And obviously as Muslims, as believers, we know that we're meant to fear only God. Now, and if we are doing something for Allah, if we know, for example, by defending ourselves, defending family, or standing up for Islam, we are doing the right thing. We are on the correct path. We are sort of fighting the enemy. Then, you know, inshallah, we will also get this sort of courage that we need. And you know, and I said we might need this in daily situations if we see, for example, someone, a member of the public being, let's say, being attacked on the street. Maybe some quite violent people are trying to, violent robbers, and this does happen anywhere in the world, are trying to maybe even sort of attack an older woman or a woman or anyone. It takes that little bit of special courage and acting very quickly to try and help, to try and scare away those robbers and to try and help that person who's being robbed. But inshallah, we all have that courage in us, placed in us by Allah, so we can react just as quickly as our martyrs have to react in the battlefield, basically. So that was it for today, and I look forward to welcoming you to another episode of AZ here on I'm Being Trader, and farewell for now. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z. And for more information, please also visit our website at www.iranradio.ir.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Good night to all of our listeners. You are tuned in to Iran Radio broadcast from Tehran. We start off this hour's programs with our news bulletin. After that, we have Around the World with reporters. Listen to fascinating reports from around the world as reporters tell us what is happening in their locality. Then it's time for Insights into the Holy Quran. The program presents a short exegesis or explanation of the ayahs of the Holy Quran, and we round up this hour's programs with leaders' speech, presenting an English translation of a selection of the statements and speeches by the Honorable Leader of the Islamic Revolution.
Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines during a visit to Moscow, Foreign Minister Arachi hails Iran-Russia ties, slamming the U.S. for interference in other countries and imposing sanctions. Trump has designated Venezuela as a terrorist organization, ordering the blockade of sanctioned oil tankers. The moves are drawing condemnation from other countries. And another Israeli soldier has taken his own life at a military base as the rate of suicide among the regime forces is on the rise. Hello and welcome everybody here in the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is World News. Our top story for this half hour, Iran's foreign minister has emphasized that Tehran and Moscow have commonalities regarding international issues and share the same position in the face of U.S. unilateralism. Arachi was addressing students of international relations at a university in Moscow. He criticized Washington for interference in other countries' affairs and imposing sanctions on nations. Arachi added that the U.S. is pushing the world toward lawlessness and chaos. The top Iranian diplomat said multiple projects and initiatives have been taken into consideration to counter the sanctions, pointing to energy as a key area of cooperation with Russia. Arachi is set to hold talks with his Russian counterpart Sergei Lavrov later today. He met with Russian lawmakers in State Duma on Tuesday. U.S. President Donald Trump has upped the ante in his hostile moves against Caracas. He has designated Venezuela as a foreign terror organization and ordered the blockade of all sanctioned oil tankers going into and out of Venezuela. Trump's moves have been slammed